Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Monster X Radio. It's December 15th, and we're glad to be back on the air after taking last week off. Joining me, as usual, is my co-host, Shane.
Hey, Johnny. How you doing tonight, man?
Doing good, doing good. Tonight, we'll be discussing the controversial topic of kill or no kill in regards to Sasquatch. Our first guest tonight is going to be Aaron, who is a pro-kill guy. He started off as no-kill, but over the years has changed his view on the topic. I found out about him through a comment on my blog post that I did recently, which was, would you kill a Sasquatch for science? And he left a comment, and I'll read that comment, and then we can welcome him to the show. Okay, here's his comment. Melba Ketchum's paper never panned out. The Olympic Project got nowhere. The Erickson Project video is a fake. The close-up face shot is a modified Chewbacca mask. You can see the teeth bend when the mouth moves. Last but not least, finding Bigfoot is finding nothing but ratings. I'm sick of it all. In general, Sasquatch researchers talk about how everyone else's research findings are hoaxed or manufactured, and their stuff is real. Enough is enough. I have a 50 caliber, a thermal imaging scope, and next summer, in my primary research area, when I have the shot, I'm going to take it. It may take years, but when I have the shot, the mystery is solved. And that was by our friend Aaron. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks, Johnny. Hey, Shane, how you doing?
Doing good, Aaron. Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
All right, Aaron. Well, you know, you took the step of jumping on the blog and giving an honest opinion, and we appreciate that, and we're glad to have you aboard here. Do you mind giving us a little bit of your background, your history, what got you into this sort of field or and whatnot, and just let the viewers and knowers, you know, out there listening, hear about yourself?
Okay, first of all, I'll give a little bit of information about myself personally so the listeners realize they're not listening to some kook from the backwoods of Alberta, Canada. I actually grew up in northeastern Ontario, which is the area where I had my first sighting back when I was 15 years old. And presently, I am married, no children. I am a businessman here in Edmonton, Alberta. I own a business in the private sector of fire protection and life safety equipment. I've been doing that for the past 20 years. In regards to the Sasquatch research, as I said, I've had my first sighting when I was 15, which started my my interest in the creature in the form of actually doing research. Prior to that, I did have an interest in the creature. Technically, I guess you could say I started my research back when I was about 11 or 12. I remember specifically it would have been grade 6. In the school system back then, we had something called a public speaking contest. And I had entered with a speech about the Sasquatch and ended up going all the way to the provincial championships for that in the province of Ontario and placed third at the provincial championships. Went to the Canadians, but didn't place in the Canadians, but it was a pretty good speech, and that's really where my interest in the Sasquatch started, but my actual research started after my first sighting. I've been doing it all these years, every chance I get to go out into the woods and look for areas where they may be migrating through or even have a domicile. I've got two main research areas now. One on Vancouver Island, which I attend for about 2 weeks at a time. I try and do it four times a year, but my primary research area is right here in the foothills of Alberta.
Interesting. We do have some Canadians on our listening in, too, so they're probably interested to hear your thoughts and ideas up there. But, you know, you said you've had an encounter, and you've had multiple encounters, though, right?
Actually, yeah, I've had many, many encounters, because an encounter is not just having a sighting. An encounter could be hearing a vocalization. An encounter could be walking down a road or a trail and having little stones or acorns or little sticks thrown at you. Finding a footprint, that in itself is an encounter. So there's not just having a sighting is an actual Sasquatch. Even being in the woods and just having that strong feeling that you're being watched, more than likely you are. And if you are, and if it is a Sasquatch, then that classifies as a Sasquatch encounter. So
oh, yeah,
I've had many encounters over the years. I've had a dozen sightings, five of which I've actually had the opportunity to see the face, all within 50 yards.
Now,
right.
Was this when you were out of researching for Bigfoot, or were you doing something else out in the woods?
No, this is actually one time was actually while I was out moose hunting. But all of the other sightings were while I was out doing research. And all the encounters that I've had, they've happened both while I was doing research and, you know, out camping, fishing, hunting, that sort of thing. There's many telltale signs in the woods, you know, of their presence. So even when I'm out moose hunting or deer hunting, I'm paying attention to my surroundings. Because I'm always looking for an area where there could possibly be a domicile. And if I find something interesting, then, yeah, when I get the opportunity, I do go back.
Yeah, I got you there. Now, before I get to the question of what you think Sasquatch is or you know, your ideas, have you ever found Sasquatch to be, I guess, an attacker or have any... You know, have you ever come across an aggressive Sasquatch?
Well, I've had some pretty scary encounters, one of which were I actually had one. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was using some gorilla pheromones, and I was doing some call blasting. And I was sitting there on the side of the mountain, total darkness, couldn't see my hand in front of my face. Mind you, this is before I had the equipment that I have now. But all of a sudden, I could hear the footsteps, and it was getting closer and closer and louder and louder. And it had actually walked right up to me, bent down, screamed in my face. And I mean, it was so close, I could feel its warm breath and spats of saliva spurting onto my face. I actually wet myself right there. And after he screamed, he stood up, and I could literally hear him taking a sniff. And he kind of snarled a little bit and then turned around and walked away. I sat there for about 15 minutes. I couldn't even move. And finally, when I got up the courage to get up and go, I went to my truck, and that's where I stayed for the night.
Well,
yeah, they you know, like any other animal that's out in the wild, I'm sure if you corner a Sasquatch or you cause it to feel threatened, in a sense threatened for its life, I'm sure like any other animal it would attack and defend itself. And I'm, you know, if anybody out there has read David Pilates' books, the Missing 411 books, and has any type of knowledge of Sasquatch, you can plainly see that, you know, I'm sure there have been people who have gone missing in the outdoors who have been the victim of a Sasquatch. So, yeah, I think they can be aggressive if they so choose to be. One of the things that I've realized over the years is their facial features, body structure, and their temperament differ just as much as humans. And when I say their temperament, you could have one that's just laid back, calm, cool, collective, not a care in the world. And then you'll have another one that's a complete psychopath, just like with humans. And I'm sure that there are victims out there who have been the victim of Sasquatch.
Interesting. Do you do your research alone then?
Yes, I do, and I do it unarmed.
Why is it that you do it unarmed? Well, I mean, I guess now you won't be, but why before did you do it unarmed? If you do follow some of David Pilates' ideas and whatnot, or just even for other wild animals?
My main research area, it was actually put on to me by a friend who knows a trapper who traps in that area. And he has actually had 7 daylight sightings So some of this information comes from him in regards to rifles, but I believe that, I'm not saying they know what a rifle is, but I think when they see, because I'm sure they've seen hunters out there take down deer, elk, moose, bear, other animals. So, you know, we're dealing with a highly intelligent species here. So when they see that something come up to the shoulder, and then, you know, after so many times of seeing an animal go down, after hearing that noise coming from where that person is standing, they might not know it's a rifle, but I'm sure they know what it could do, which I also believe is part of the reason why we've got so much distorted video footage and grainy photographs, because I believe that as soon as they see something coming up, automatically they portray that as danger, and they're gone as quick as they can to get out of sight.
Yeah, I definitely think they know what a gun is. I mean, the crows at our old farmhouse used to know what a gun was. If we walked out in the backyard with a rake and pointed in the air, they would sit and mock us. We walked out with a shotgun, pointed in the air, they knew. They knew the difference between a rake and a shotgun.
Yeah, so if something is, you know, as simple as a raven, which actually they are an intelligent bird, but, you know, the Sasquatch, we're dealing with the most, I would say, the most elusive species on the face of the planet. They are the best trackers in the world. They could track an animal or even a human better than any man can. I just think that based on my research, the intelligence I see from this species, it's just incredible. And I just think that there's no matter what we try, even with game cams, somehow they're able to avoid game cams, apparently. I've never had a successful picture with a game cam. Some believe that could be maybe perhaps they're able to pick up on the low magnetic frequencies coming from the electronic equipment. Well, who knows? But the intelligence definitely is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was Tim Fasano. He posted some game cam pictures of deer that were, like, looking into the camera, where he thought even, like, other animals can sense them somewhat sometimes, but, you know, they obviously aren't afraid of them enough to avoid them.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that a lot of animals, you know, deer and whatnot, can see the infrared a lot of times. I think that's almost proven. So, but and definitely with Sasquatch, Tombalt, Ninja of the Forest, this is their home, their, you know, the place that they live. They know it like the back of their hand. Super intelligent. Obviously, I mean, that goes without
saying.
It's just
the amount. It's just the amount of trail cams we have out that is amazing. I mean, the Department of Natural Resources, they have trail cams out year-round, and hunters do practically too. It's
The one thing about trail cameras,
I mean, are they
really
perfect?
There is that many trail cameras as everybody believes, especially in remote areas. I mean, Aaron here, I don't know your research area, but is it semi-remote?
Yeah, it's semi-remote. In the wintertime, it's absolutely inaccessible. Unless you're willing to, you know, take the time and effort to walk in on snowshoes or try and get a snow machine in there. Basically, in the summertime, it is easily accessible, but it's not an area where a lot of people go. The odd time you'll see quarters on one of the trails nearby, but pretty much the area that I tend to, it's along an abandoned trap line. Actually, the trapper, because of the issues that he has had with Sasquatches, he doesn't even trap on that line anymore.
Wow.
So it's it's easily accessible, but there's really nobody that goes back there.
Gotcha. Now I wanted to talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on what you believe Sasquatch to be, or maybe more. Do you think it's more human-like, more ape-like, a crossbreed, a hybrid? I mean, your ideas there, since you have seen one on more than one occasion?
Well, I believe that they are very, very possibly a type of human. The reason why I say that is the five times that I've actually had the opportunity to view their face. Basically, I was looking at the face of a man, all covered in hair. Now, I will say that two of them did appear to be Asian-looking, whereas the other three faces looked more native-looking. But I would have to say that the faces that I saw, nothing except for being covered in hair and high brow ridge, nothing about their face really indicated that it was an ape. I believe that they quite possibly are some type of humanoid species.
Hmm. Okay. What about the nose? Was it human-like, flat, broad, and the skin tone?
Well, the skin tone was a darker skin tone, with the exception of one female that I saw. She had a lighter skin tone. But in regards to, to talk about a general face description, as I said, their facial features differ just as much as humans. So it's not like they've all got, a wide bridge, flat nose.
Mm-hmm.
One might have, a wide bridge, flat nose, where the other one will have a more narrow nose that sticks out further. As I said, the features do differ just as much as humans.
Hmm. You would think there's a decent-sized breeding population, then, if you're getting that much variation within the species.
Good point.
Pretty big area up there, huh?
It's hard to put an estimate on how many that we really have out there. Some people say, a few thousand in North America. Some say as high as, 10,000, 15,000. But perhaps we'll never know, because of the fact that this species is, they're so elusive. I don't think there's any way that we will ever figure out exactly or even estimate how many there are. In order to do that, we would pretty much have to spend enough time out there to gain the trust of a family unit and start communicating with them and learn their language and have them learn ours. And that's all, that would take literally hundreds of years probably to get that successful.
Mm-hmm.
How many years have Sasquatch researchers been going out there? And it's still not proven to be a recognized species. Things down the road, it would take a very, very long time if we were to ever have any type of social interaction to any extent.
Do you think that they're capable of using tools, like primitive man, perhaps? I mean, rocks, sticks. Do you think they're capable of starting fires, anything like that? Your thoughts?
I don't think they're capable of starting fires. But then again, we really don't know what they're doing when they're back in their cave or shelter or whatever. So unless I actually saw a Sasquatch, working on getting a fire going, I don't know. I would have to say I don't think that they use fires. They may use some very, very basic hand tools. I've never actually seen it, but I've heard of deer carcasses that have been found in the woods, and the belly was cut open, but it wasn't like it was done with a sharp blade or a knife. One occasion that I heard of, there was actually a rock that was found nearby that had some blood on it, and the rock had a sharp edge, and they're suspecting that the Sasquatch used the sharp rock to cut open the belly to get at the liver and the heart, which is the first two organs that they're going to go for. Even some of the kills that I've found deer and elk kills in the bush that just the heart and the liver was gone. And those two organs there are going to be so rich in energy, and that's probably why they go for that first. And, I'm sure there is the odd carcass, too, that they probably drag back to the cave or to their domicile to feed the rest of the group, because I do believe that they do live in family and or group units.
Have you ever seen a juvenile or an infant Sasquatch?
I won't say juvenile or infant, but I have seen younger ones. And, you know, I wouldn't say that they were kids. They were more like, in a sense, in their teenage years. I've seen twice. One I saw with my own eyes, and the other one was actually through my night vision goggles as it ran across the road.
Because kind of what I'm doing here is I'm trying to paint a picture, because you kind of believe that they are closer to humans than apes, obviously, maybe some form of human or hominid, or, you know. So I guess when we get down to it, you would still – would you take a shot at say you saw an infant or juvenile, would you take that shot now?
If I saw an infant or juvenile – I don't think I would take that shot. I would be definitely looking through my scope for Mama or Papa, though. As you know, mind you, I didn't have these thoughts last year. You know, my decision to go pro kill and to actually attempt to go out and get one wasn't really made lightly, and it was actually made recently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even if
I don't know if I could. It's like shooting a cub bear. It's just that's a no-no. If you're doing a spring bear hunt for bear, you don't want to shoot a sow that has a cub, nor do you want to shoot a cub. So I would have to say with the Sasquatch, I wouldn't kill a young one. But as I said, I'd definitely be looking through the scope for Mama or Papa.
Yeah, but see, the only problem I have with that there is, well, I have a few problems, but my problem with that is that if you kill the mama and she's nursing, per se, you pretty much screw the infant anyways.
Well, not if they're in a family clan.
We don't know.
Well, I believe that they do live in family groups. And other Sasquatch researchers will tell you the same thing. If you see a Sasquatch, more than likely, it's not alone.
I agree.
Even the sightings that I've had, sometimes I did see both of them or two of however many were there around me. And other times I saw the one, but I knew behind me or to my east or west or whatever, there was another one there as well. So I would have to say that most of the time they're in pairs or greater numbers than that. I would say very seldom are they traveling alone. Even in times when they're hunting, I'm sure that they work together as a team in order to ambush their prey. So, yeah, if you see one, more likely, there's another one around somewhere.
It would make sense because we've never found a body. I mean, I think if one was to die or get hit by a car or get shot, I think the other ones would have a way of hiding it or something, because it's really amazing if they exist that we haven't found a body.
Well, I think the ones out there that pass away, I would think that a majority of them would pass away during the winter. I believe our winters are very, very hard on them, even some places in the States where they have harsh winters.
Yeah, like where I'm at.
So I think that would affect the young and the old, quite drastically in the winters. And I think in the wintertime, I think what they would probably do is probably bury their dead in the snow somewhere, and then once spring comes, then they would take it and bury it in their official capacity. Because I do believe that they very well could possibly bury their dead. And I think if they were going to bury their dead, they would want to bury it in a spot where the animals are not going to smell it and get at it. And the only place really, without digging down 6 feet, the only place really I could think of where you could bury that and not have the animal would be in the muskeg, and excuse the expression, but down in the loon shed, you know, because that would even preserve the body. So if anybody had any way of figuring out, you know, where in a patch of muskeg or whatever a Sasquatch may have been buried, you know, that might be a way of finding something that's, you know, been preserved. Maybe get somebody with them, other than things called, it's a little, there's two little rods. You hold them in your hand, and you can use it. It's not for finding water. I've seen a guy use
it. Yeah, they did it on that America on Earth show with the Minnesota Giants.
Yeah.
I forgot what those are called.
Yeah, you know.
Sticks. I forget what they're called.
Yeah, if that thing really does work, go up to an area, ask it, you know, where is there dead Sasquatch? Point us to it. Bring us to it. You know, so if anybody out there knows how to use them and they really do work, get in touch with me. I'll bring you to a spot. Because that would be much better than shooting one, to be able to somehow find the remains of one that died naturally. That would be the ideal method of getting a specimen. But it hasn't happened yet. There has been some things in the past where things people have said and done, and I shot this Bigfoot or I shot that Bigfoot, but nothing's really come out of it, you know, which is getting into the reason why I switched from no-kill to pro-kill. You know, we got all these things going on in the Sasquatch research world that never, ever panned out. Promise after promise from this researcher, this scientist, that scientist. You know, I'm not going to start naming names or anything like that, but with all the projects out there that have been concluded and they say, oh, we've got this, you know, nothing's panned out. You know, the genome paper. Put out by Dr. Melba Ketchum. You know, she had to start her own journal in order to get it published. Why? Because no official journal wanted to look at it simply due to the subject matter. Nobody wants to be affiliated with it. They hear Sasquatch and they don't even want to talk about it. Because I think it's because of all of the hoaxes that have been done and proven over the years, has just got mainstream science just so afraid of the subject. You know, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, he was actually fired from a university because of his involvement with Sasquatch research. You know, now he's with an excellent university who, you know, seems to support him in his research. But then Dr. Jeff Meldrum, he's a very good physical anthropologist. You know, he's one of the world's leading experts in footprints, specifically primate and Sasquatch footprints. And he's also the world's leading expert in human and primate locomotion. You know, so we're not dealing with some backwater professor at some no-name college or university. We're dealing with a man who truly feels in his heart that there's enough evidence there that justifies further investigation. He's looking at it at a scientific point of view. There is a level of evidence. The evidence does look good, and it does justify further investigation into the subject matter. But there's just been so much stuff, you know, and like I said before, I pretty much stayed out of the realm of the Sasquatch research world. I did go to an expedition in 2006 with the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, and yeah, it was a fun time and everything, but to me, it just... To me, it was more of a It was more of an expedition for a specific group of people within the BFRO, paid for by the other people who paid $300 to $500 to go there. There really wasn't much organization in regards to the expedition, and you know who's going to go where and what, and there was also things that were discovered on the expedition, and you know one of the members of this let's call it the inner circle, would normally go and have a look. Like somebody found some footprints, and somebody went and looked at them, and they discredited the footprints. You know, it's a double step from a bear kind of thing. Blah 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 blah, and then go to find out that night they actually went back to that area where the footprints were found and casted those footprints, and then snuck them into the van to take back to California. So it's just, I've stayed out of the realm of Sasquatch research world because, in general, like I said, the Sasquatch researchers, they talk about how everybody else's research findings and whatnot is crap, and their stuff is for real. And, you know, with everything that's happened, let's say in the last 2 years, you know, the Rick Dyer thing, well, apparently he went out and, you know, killed the Sasquatch, and they actually got the shot and everything, you know, on film. You know, where is that? Where is the body? You know, Justin Smedja, who I am going to say who did shoot and kill two Sasquatches. Now, when the BFRO came to Canada to do an episode of their show, Finding Bigfoot, another Sasquatch researcher that I know who was actually there at the town hall meeting overheard Bobo and I can't remember the gentleman's name, Gary Cronin, that's it. Gary Cronin and Bobo were talking about the Justin Smedja thing, and my friend overheard Bobo tell Gary, dude, they've got the bodies. Wally's got them put away. And I've met Bobo before. I was on one expedition with him. I spent a little bit of time with him. And he is a sincere person in regards to Sasquatch research. And the person that overheard this conversation, I trust them with my life. So if he tells me that Bobo said this, then yes, I do believe that Bobo did say it. And so apparently Wally's got the bodies somewhere. So like, where are they? But now I find out Justin Smedja is one of the contestants on this Spike TV $10 million Bigfoot bounty thing. Well, somebody's got to get the $10 million. They can't have a reality game show without having a winner, can they?
Well, I think what's going to happen is if they don't get the whole deal, they'll win $100,000 or something. It's kind of like the consolation prize if they don't get conclusive evidence.
Well, I think quite possibly that maybe this is when these bodies are going to come out because, you know, like I said, apparently the two bodies are out there, and apparently Wally's got them someplace in storage somewhere.
I've heard
maybe
these
that'll come out.
Maybe. I've heard these rumors
like
before,
I said,
too.
It's all apparent, but, it's kind of interesting. We have this thing with Justin Smedja. He did actually shoot and kill two Sasquatches. One of the samples in Dr. Melba Ketchum's study actually did come from Justin and
right.
One of those bodies. I think quite possibly the bodies are there, and perhaps maybe they're going to come out with them at the end of this series in the last episode, and maybe Justin Smedja will be our $10 million winner. But then again, maybe there are no bodies. Who knows? But there's just been so much crap going on in the last few years. This guy's got a shot one, that guy shot one. Oh, we've got top quality footage. You know, the Matilda video. I have another friend who is a Sasquatch researcher who was actually at Adrian Erickson's house watching the video. And I haven't seen it for myself, but again, this comes from a person that I would trust with my life. And if they're saying it, I do believe it. So basically, they were watching the video, and when they were watching the part with the close-up face shot, you can actually see the teeth bend, apparently, in the video. Now, if those were real teeth, the teeth would not bend when the mouth moves. And it looks more like a modified Chewbacca mask. If you look at it really closely, you'll see a lot of features of Chewbacca from the Star Wars movies. And actually, when this was noticed at Adrian Erickson's house, when Adrian and my friend had saw this, apparently Matt Moneymaker is involved with this somehow, because at that time, apparently Adrian picked up the phone and called Matt and questioned Matt on the teeth bending, and apparently Matt had told him, oh, just edit out the last 3 seconds, it'll be okay. So,
oh yeah, Matt's been defending that footage to the hilt lately on Twitter. He will not.
Well, he has to because of the connections.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, if this is all just speculation, right? And these are things that I've heard from people that I trust. Like I said, I trust with my life. So, you know, if it really is a hoax, this Erickson footage, then Matt Moneymaker is involved with it in some way, shape, or form, because why would Adrian be calling Matt, questioning him about the teeth moving in the close-up face shot? So I think Matt Moneymaker and or the BFRO had something to do with collecting some of this video as well. So also... The little short video of Matilda laying there in the bush, and you can apparently see her breathing. That is not hair that you're looking at. And, you know, I can see it with my own eyes, and I can tell what you're actually looking at is you're actually looking at a ghillie suit that is made of jute. Now, what is jute? Jute is burlap that's unweaved. And in fact, I can even tell you which website the ghillie suit was bought from, ghilliesuits.com. If you go onto their website, you will be able to see many, many pictures of their various types of ghillie suits, which they supply to the U.S. Army, the Marine Corps, the French regime. They sell these ghillie suits to military and law enforcement all over the world. And if you look at the pictures of Matilda and you look at the pictures of those ghillie suits, you're going to see some very, very close similarities in the patterns. Now, I have a friend who is a taxidermist. His name is Ken Walker. He's actually a 5-time world champion taxidermist. So he knows animal hair. And he could look at a picture and tell you whether that's real hair or not. And even he laughed at it when he looked at the picture. So, yeah, in my opinion, from what they've released so far of the Erickson footage, it's fake. And,
yeah, I thought it was a 70s shag rug with an air pump under it.
Well, no, I just think it was actually somebody in a ghillie suit that was laying there and breathing.
Yeah.
Also, well, the amount that this thing was breathing in the video, you know, if you're an animal or a human, when you go to sleep, your breathing slows down. You're not going to have those big, gaspy, chest, full chest expanding, you know, kind of thing when you're sleeping. And that video shows, you know, quite a bit of, you know, expansion in the upper body as it's breathing. And I think it's just a little bit too much for an animal that's supposed to be sleeping. So, yeah, I just think it's fake. With the way the Sasquatch research world is out there, there's a lot of hate and everything. And I'm just,
yeah, there
like
is.
You said, I'm sick of it. Enough is enough. You know, I very well may never get the shot. Then again, I might get a shot and then end up getting myself killed. I don't know.
That leads me to my
and
next question.
And I'm not
question.
Doing this.
I was going to say, go ahead. I was going to say, that leads me to my next question. If you get that shot, say you get that $1 million shot, or $1 in 10 million, what is your game plan for exiting? I mean, what is your game plan? Because I do as well believe that Sasquatch really doesn't travel by itself. So you're either putting yourself in danger or in a very precarious situation. I mean, what is your plan of escape? Are you willing to shoot two Sasquatches, or are you thinking that you can get in and out? Because obviously you're not going to carry a 400 to 800 pound animal out of there. You're going to, you know, have to take a chunk of meat or arm or leg or a head or something, right?
Well, if I'm lucky enough and I get the shot and the animal goes down and, okay, I've come up to it, there it is. It's dead Bigfoot. It's on the ground. Now, the 50 caliber that I bought, I specifically bought a semi-automatic for the purpose of, if I do shoot one and another one comes up from behind the trees at me, I want to make sure that I don't have to take the time to handle a bolt-action rifle. I would rather a semi-automatic. You know, plus I have a sidearm that I plan on carrying. But if I'm able to get one down without having any type of conflict from any others that may be around, then you really wouldn't want to leave it and come back, because you're taking a big chance of, you know, like even if I went to the truck to go and get my horse, to have my horse pull it out to the truck, it would be, you'd be taking a chance of it being gone. Because if there was another one around that just didn't respond to you killing, his friend, then, I'm sure by the time you got back, then the body would very well be gone. So I think unless you're prepared, and I would be by myself, because with a group of people, the odds of getting the shot would be a lot greater than the odds of being alone. You'd have a better chance of getting a shot alone than with a group of people, basically, is what I'm saying. So I think it would either be cut off the head, the hands, and the feet and get out with that, or, depending on the weight, I don't know if I'd be able to do it. I would have to definitely try, even to drag it out of there. But I think people in general who have had sightings totally underestimate the weight of these animals. I would think that your average mature male weighs in excess of 800 to 1,000 pounds, not 300, 400, or 500 like most people think. And that comes from my experience of actually seeing these animals. I haven't just seen parts of them. There were 7 times where I've actually seen the entire animal. And all of my sightings have very easily been within 50 yards. So I would have to say that most people in general underestimate the weight. So you would have a lot of weight to drag out of the bush if you did get one down. So I think probably your quickest and easiest option would be cut off the head, the hands, and the feet, and then get out.
How do you think you're able to get so close to these things? Is the 'cause the woods are so thick, or?
There have been a couple of times where, in the dense woods where you just happen to, come out of the bush onto a creek bed, and, you look up the creek to your left and, there's one squatted down, 30, 40 yards up creek, or even when you're just walking down, sometimes they'll even show themselves purposely to let you know that they are there. But those kinds of things tend to happen after you've spent a significant amount of time. Like it took me 2 years in my main research area before they would actually come out and show themselves to me. Because there have been occasions where I've just been walking along and they would step out of the bush onto the trail or onto the cut line or the track line and just show themselves to me and then disappear back into the trees again just to let me know that they were there.
Well, what kind of cameras have you used? Have you tried like GoPros? I mean, do you even get a good footage?
Well, I just recently, basically up until last year, I just basically just walked along with my, you know, my regular, Fujifilm digital camera. Basically it does video as well as still pictures. But then about a year and a half ago, I went out and I splurged a bunch of money. I bought a thermal imager with recording capabilities. I bought night vision with recording capabilities, audio recorders, parabolic microphones, game cameras, you name it. Any piece of equipment that I could use to get on video or audio, or even still pictures of anything. I just went out and I splurged. The time had come. I found a good area that looked very promising and has been very promising. I just went out and so it's only been recent that I've had all of the high quality technical equipment that I have. You know, I've even got a full evidence collection kit for collecting hair samples, DNA samples, stool samples, pouring plaster casts of footprints, and it's got everything from, rubber gloves to snow wax. I've done a lot of research in regards to how to properly collect evidence. I've spoken with many various crime scene investigators and people who work in forensics and gotten a lot of tips from them on how to properly collect evidence as well as keep a documentation of the chain of custody for that evidence. We recently got some hair samples back in the late October that are looking very promising. And even when we're collecting that evidence, I videotape everything, and you can actually see I'm collecting it with gloves. So I'm able, in the evidence that I do collect, I'm able to prove non-contamination and chain of custody. So I've done a lot of research and spent a lot of money to get everything that I need to properly document everything that I come across when I'm out doing my research.
Nice.
So, I mean, when it comes down to it, I guess the so your main goal, I mean, a lot of people are like, well, I don't need to prove existence. I do want to collect evidence, or I do want to be around Sasquatch and share my encounters. But with you, I mean, you really want to prove the existence. I mean, that's your goal.
Yeah. Anybody who comes out and says, oh, I want to kill a Sasquatch, that obviously they're trying to prove that it exists. Now, I'm not looking for money or fame. Before I was pro-kill, I would go out and do my Sasquatch researcher solely out of my interest for the species, which is why, I don't have all kinds of videos and stuff on YouTube, and I share very little of what I find simply because of, like I said before, the whole persona of, that guy's stuff is crap, but my research findings are real, right? So I never really bothered to share any of my research findings or evidence with the main Sasquatch research world simply because of all of the hatred and ridicule that goes on within a group that's already ridiculed by the general public. And it just makes no sense to me. I want no part of it. So that's why I've never, really put videos on YouTube and that kind of thing. But actually, now that we're getting into it, I was actually planning on starting production of a weekly TV show next spring in my research area. And I still plan to possibly do it someday, but because of me going out and wanting to actually kill a Sasquatch now, I'm putting that show on hold. But it had a format of one man alone in the Canadian wilderness searching for Sasquatch. And that was actually going to be the title of the show, Searching for Sasquatch. I was going to do it in a total Les Stroud Survivor Man kind of way, where I'm out there, just me, no production crew. And I'm not just doing walking around at night like the call blasting and stuff. I do very, very little. With the exception of my spot on Vancouver Island, my main research area here, I have never gotten a response to any wood knock, any whoop, or any howl, or any of the other types of call blasting that you see on TV and in other videos. So, you know, to be going around the woods only at night, making all kinds of noise, you know, typically I think it's rude. I wouldn't want somebody coming into my backyard screaming and hollering all night either. You know, so call blasting really isn't effective. However, I do have to say that my research area on Vancouver Island, if I go there pretty much any time of the year, because they're in this location year-round, and even when I'm not there, there's somebody who goes and checks on it for me. And every time we go there, if we do a whoop, we'll get a whoop in return. We do wood knocks, we get wood knocks in returns, we get whoops in returns, we get responses to vocalizations there at the spot on Vancouver Island, but not here in Alberta. So I really don't waste my time with it here at my research area in Alberta. But, you know, I think a real true Sasquatch show should cover your nighttime investigation stuff as well as your daytime investigation stuff. There are many, many telltale signs out there in the woods, you know, that show signs of their presence in the area. And it's coverage of that stuff that is evidence as well. You know, it's not definitive evidence, but it's evidence, it's primate-type behavior, and it's evidence that they are in the area. So I would go with a total, you know, Survivor Man-type persona to it, where it's just one guy out there with a few cameras and all the rest of the gear doing his thing. And, you know, one of the pieces of equipment that I actually use is they're called iCam Extreme. They're a pair of glasses that have a built-in HD video camera as well as a microphone.
Oh, that would be
so
cool.
Whatever. And I didn't buy a cheap pair online for $20, $30 coming out of Hong Kong. No, these ones are actually made by a company called Hunter Specialties. And they were like $180, these glasses. So, you know, They're good quality glasses, and you know, like I said, I splurge and I spent money and I got some good quality equipment. My game cams cost me $500 a piece. My thermal imager costed me $10,000. You know, it's a lot of money tied up in research tools that that I hope to you know, prove promising. But as I said, because of everything that's been going on in the Sasquatch research world, with all the hatred and all the promises and this and that, and nothing ever panning out, it's just gotten me fed up. And so now, instead of going out to do Sasquatch research, well, I'll still be doing research, but my goal will be to get that shot to bring one down, just to finally prove to everybody, mainstream science, general public, you know, just to prove that they exist. Like I said, I'm not looking for money. I'm not looking for fame. If I was able to get out the body, the entire body, actually the first thing I would do is I would take that to Ken Walker's house in Alberta Beach, Alberta. As I said, he's a taxidermist, five-time world champion taxidermist. I'd bring it to his house and have him cast it so that
if it was human-looking, would he do that?
Oh, I know he would. Yes, we've already discussed it. I know. Ken and I really, there was an incident, and we may or may not get into it, but Ken and I were We're not on speaking terms right now, but even though we're not on speaking terms, I would still show up at his house with that in the back of my truck so that he can cast it. And then after he casted it and was able to make a form so that he can make one up, basically after he formed it, then it would go back in the back of the truck and then down to Edmonton to the CTV news studios. I would go inside, I would get a news producer and a cameraman, and like I said, if I had the body, I would get a news producer and a cameraman, or even if I just had the head, the hands, and the feet, I'd bring just that to CTV News. And basically, I'd bring the cameraman and the news producer up to the truck. If it was a whole body, I'd just pull it right out of the back of the truck onto the pavement in the parking lot at CTV News. I'd give them a piece of paper with my name and phone number on it, and then I'd get in my truck and drive away. And if it was just the head, the hands, and the feet, I would leave them at CTV News with the head, the hands, and the feet. But let's just say it was the whole body. Now you've got a news producer and a cameraman out in the parking lot with people driving in and out of the parking lot with a dead Sasquatch on the ground looking at each other going, what do we do? What do we do? Well, obviously they're going to call Fish and Wildlife, right? But now it's out. They're not going to not cover that. It's not like they're going to call Fish and Wildlife and say, oh, just come and take it away. No, that's going to be a major news story. It's going to be on national news, 6 o'clock, 5:30, 11 o'clock, and eventually every news station in the country, maybe even in North America, will be covering that story. Now, as I said, I'm going to leave them my name and my phone number. If anybody wants to contact me and do an in-person or on-camera interview as to, you know, how I got this, then okay, fine and dandy. If there is some financial benefits from it, okay, fine and dandy. Nobody's going to turn down money, right? But I am not doing it for the purpose of fame or money. I just want to prove it to the world that this species does exist, and get it done with, rather than all the other crap that's been going on with the promises and, oh, I shot one, or this other guy shot one, and we got it on video, and where is it all, guys? Where is it?
Hey Aaron, you know, we're going to leave.
Rick Dyer, if you're out there, where is it?
It's not there.
Fair enough.
But we're going to take a quick break here, Aaron. We're going to have Gunner on with his Bigfoot Coffee, and then we'll get right back to you. But if you want to send us in the break, Johnny.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back. right, welcome back, everybody. We're going to give our friend Gunner here a call, who is the founder of Coffee. I'm not seeming to be able to call out here, Shane. I'm going to send him the number.
Yeah, send him a link. We can continue talking to our guests.
Yeah.
And
we should read some of those comments that were posted on the MXR page about the kill or no kill as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's, I think it's pretty one-sided, you know, as far as the thought of killing one or not. I believe it's far in the favor of not, but, you know, I do also believe there's a lot of closet people out there that do not comment their true feelings on the matter either. They kind of say they wouldn't, or they just don't comment at all, but in fact they, you know, might even feel the same as our guest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's definitely a more of a one-sided deal in the community, and people are so passionate that you're going to get a lot of flack.
Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, I couldn't do it. You know, if I had them lined up in a scope, which would never happen, you know, if I had to protect my life, perhaps. But you know, I always carry no matter where I go. But it's not for Sasquatch. It's you know, there's a lot of other predators out there, and even the amount of crazy people out in the woods, you just never know what you're going to come across. So I like to, you know, I'm one of those guys that like to be looking for it rather, you know, at it than for it. So, but I couldn't pull
definitely.
The trigger. I don't have the need to pull the trigger. You know, I know they exist. I just don't feel the need. Would I love to prove them? Yeah, I'm in the boat. You know, a lot of people don't like that, but I'm in the boat of wanting to prove them. But it's not a necessity to kill one for me. If I never happens to be proven, that's fine by me. But I don't really feel the urge to do so. I can give, you know, me personally, I can give a riff about the community as far as, you know, the drama and all that. I do this purely for myself and those that, you know, I like to talk to. You know, I love what Derek Randles has got going on, Bart Catino and these guys. There's many more researchers out there, you know. I don't personally have the, I can give a riff about the community. If they, you know, they can bag on Sasquatch, you know, even outside the community. You know, if they don't believe, that's fine, you know. I'm not out to totally prove the existence. I'd love to, but for me, it's just the whole the whole
community wears on you, though. You know, and if I could go back to just not being in the community, I'm fine with the mystery. But when you get in the community and all these, kind of like Aaron was saying, these fanciful claims and whatnot, you get to a point where, like, let's just prove the damn thing. I mean, yeah, I'd rather tranquilize it, and I am in the, you know, field is if you shoot it, you eat it, you do something with it, you know. But I guess the first thing for me would be, is it an animal or is it a human? But,
yeah,
right.
And
tranquilizing it,
as,
I would be
well,
for.
Well, something as a hunter,
but,
you know, it's something
you
don't do.
We got Gunner
here
now.
Okay, yeah, let's take Gunner.
Gunner Monson of Bigfoot Coffee, welcome to MXR.
How you doing?
Great.
Great, Gunner.
How's it going?
Very well, very well. We're talking about one of our favorite things here, Bigfoot.
And we're glad to have you on the show, Gunner. You know, I met you a few times and whatnot, and really excited about your whole Bigfoot coffee. Not only does it taste great, but it's just such an awesome thing. You know, I really enjoyed meeting you again up there at the Sasquatch Summit, and you had your little booth there, and it seemed very popular, and you know, got my sample and whatnot, and absolutely loved it.
I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, very much so.
Feedback's been good. So,
oh,
what else
do
you want to be drinking while you're out squatching?
Exactly. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the Bigfoot Coffee, how you got it going, and how you came up with this whole idea?
Yeah, well, actually, what happened is I own a grocery store, so one of the gals that works for me has a friend that brews coffee. So, and she said, we should be carrying this in the store, and it's the best coffee I've ever had. And, well, let me try it and see, you know, that you're not just, you know, blowing smoke. So I try it, and I'm like, man, that is good coffee. And I, you know, I'm kind of a coffee connoisseur. So, like, you know, what would be really cool is to have a Squatch coffee, a Bigfoot coffee. I'm like, well, you know, I'll talk to him and see what he'd be open to. And he loved the idea. And like, so I just ran with it. So we're in the process right now of finishing up our website. And we just did a big push on Facebook to, we called it the Stomp to 1,000. So we were like, get to 1,000 likes, which we did. And I was actually amazed how fast it went. You know, I just had like a little, got a wild hair on a Friday. And by the next, you know, less than a week, we bust up over 1,000. I think we're sitting at a little over 1,100 now. So we're still going. So, and the idea is we're going to, you know, sell coffee, and we've got mugs now and T-shirts, and but we're going to do some gift baskets. And one of the things I found at the Squatch Summit was I talked to Dr. Meldrum and Cliff Berrickman about getting casts. We're going to do some gift baskets that actually have a cast in them besides coffee and mugs. Excellent. And stuff. So.
Very exciting.
Very cool.
Well, I mean, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, once
I mean,
it was at 950, I blogged it on my Bigfoot Research blog. That was pretty cool to watch it go to 1,000 there as the countdown.
It was funny, too. I mean, people got real excited. It was fun because part of it, you know, is, yeah, it's coffee, but it's like, but it's coffee with the Bigfoot twist and the build, you know, keep it in, like, the Squatch community. And it's something positive. There is a lot of, like, you know, how we like politics and trauma that goes on in Squatch, and it seems it's funny because, you know, we're all looked out from the outside as kind of fringe. I'm not just a grocery guy, but I actually Squatch. So, but it's, you know, it's like, and then there's all the little niches inside and factions and people, which is kind of amusing, but I like to go out and Squatch with people that I like, and I don't have time for that. Life is too short for all the crap that people, you know, like going at each other. And like, man, there's some people doing some pretty cool stuff. So I really like the idea of people like sharing information and working together. And there is a lot of that too. So that's really cool.
Perhaps over a cup of coffee?
Oh, hey, you know, even better if they're over some Bigfoot coffee.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think it's a tagline.
Great idea.
Bigfoot coffee. Have you tried it, Yeti?
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Yeah. I have to give credit to my web guy for that. He like came up with that like off the top of his head. That's pretty good. The other one we got is Bigfoot coffee. Yowie, it's good. It's like, you know, play with the different Bigfoot names and so.
They're endless.
I don't think you're in. We want to go anywhere with that one. So,
no, I wouldn't be asked to try that.
Bigfoot coffee, it tastes like urine. Not so good. Yeah.
No.
not every idea is a good one. So yeah, we're having a lot of fun with it. And like we said, we're just getting started because actually the Bigfoot, you know, there's a lot of people that are into it. The whole finding Bigfoot thing, I don't know how you guys feel about it. It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, and it's a great, like, raising awareness for, you know, to a lot of people. And like, yeah, it's, but, and to get kids into it. But, you know, even the people on the show don't consider that what they're doing on the show.
No, you could talk to Cliff and he'll tell you it's a show first.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he knows that.
Right.
He has only so much control. It's, you know, producers
and
all that. So,
right.
None of us
are running around with cameras strapped to us. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it's, you know, like I said, it raises awareness. And there's, I mean, a lot of people, like, you know, 1.5 million people to watch Finding Bigfoot, which is pretty cool. So there is an interest in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you got any future events planned as far as any summits or anything else planned we might be attending?
You know, I just got somebody from Ohio contact me. They're having a shindig in sometime in May, I think. I just wanted to say the words shindig, so. But I'm still putting the calendar together for next year. So as things pop up, we'll be showing up with some Bigfoot coffee. But right now, the concentrator is to finish off the website. So we started to, you know, because when I started doing the stomp to 1,000, people started asking, well, I want to buy some. So we actually started taking orders by email and then calling people to confirm on the phone. And so the people are not, you know, chewing at the bit to get themselves some Bigfoot coffee. What we're working on now is now like naming different varieties. You know, we want Bigfoot blend and one of a dark blend would be Howl in the Night. So that's like a cool. And then I want to put stories on the back of the bags that, like, you know, talk about what, like, I talked to Bart Catino about putting the story about his thermal image, you know, how that came about. So just to add a kind of fun coolness level to it.
So, yeah.
And, like, get a bag of coffee, but a bag of coffee with, you know, a Bigfoot story. And, you know, so, we're having a good time with it, so.
Excellent. You should also look into, we have Dan and Paul in our chat room, but they also have a group called the Janowska Project, and they're having a big shindig in June of next year, and I'm sure they'd love to have you there. I know Jeff Meldrum's going to be there along with a few others.
Yep, that's in Ohio as well.
Yeah, I'll get a hold of them. What's that?
They're in Ohio as well.
Yeah, in Ohio as well.
Well, cool. Yeah, that's one of, like, the most active states. It's really cool. I growing up, I never thought, Ohio is a big Bigfoot state, but it really is.
I think that's
where Matt Moneymaker had his, like, first. I think that's where Moneymaker had his first encounter.
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I'll give you a link to them off air sometime. Because I know they'd love to have you, and like I said, they're having it's quite a huge event, so might be something you're interested in.
Sure, that'd be great.
I know they'd love to have you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Try to make it.
Excellent.
So, you guys have any other questions about Bigfoot coffee, or?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's a genius idea. You know,
cool.
Especially where you're living, you're in the heart of Bigfoot country,
He's out on the coast, and it's an awesome area and highly active area, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because people know, you know, I got the grocery store, and people know me as the Bigfoot grocery guy. So, like, I don't know how many people, like, have called me and, like, told me their Bigfoot stories. And I've had people come in and give reports, and then I always kind of direct them to the BFRO to like, turn it in because I think
And
then we've gone out and investigated a couple of things. So, it's cool. And then Sean and I have been out to we have a kind of a research area up in the mountains that we've had a lot of activity at. So.
Yep. Excellent. Well, we appreciate having you on, Gunnar. And hope to have you on down the road. And good luck with the Bigfoot Coffee. And I'll need to stop by the store sometime and have a cup of coffee with you.
That sounds great.
Awesome.
Thanks,
guys. I can't wait to try it. Excited.
Great. Well, thank you.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye. And I must say, it is really good coffee. If you guys like your coffee, and when I'm out in the field, I like to take some coffee with me. And when I wake up in the morning, it's the first thing that starts my day. So Bigfoot Coffee, I highly recommend it. Whether at home or in the field or, you know, what have you. I know this is really going to take off. Like I said, it's really good coffee.
Yeah. Aaron, are you back with us now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Have you heard of Bigfoot Coffee?
No, I just heard about it now. Yeah, Bigfoot Coffee for when you need to urinate.
it's good stuff. It will, you know, or... But anyways, so glad to have you back, Aaron. I had a question in the chat earlier that I didn't get to, but have you any association with Harvey Pratt or Todd Standing, or what are your thoughts on them?
Okay, actually, Harvey Pratt, I've heard of him. I've never had the opportunity to meet with him or even talk with him. Todd Standing, on the other hand, I've had some interaction with.
Okay.
My primary research area was shown to me by Ken Walker, who learned from it from an individual who for many years trapped in that area. Now, Ken is more of an enthusiast than a researcher. So he showed me a spot so that I could spend time there doing legitimate research. And after so much time in there and with the success I was having, I wanted to get another Sasquatch researcher's perspective on the things that I was discovering. Now, Todd Standing, there's a lot of negative stuff being said about him, but I'm the type of person, I'll judge you based on how I see you, on my interaction with you. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll get in touch with him, bring him to the spot, show it to him, see what he thinks. That'll give me the opportunity to meet him, feel him out, and try and figure out whether he's legit. Todd Standing is a very well-spoken individual. He is a legitimate Sasquatch researcher. He has some video that is very compelling, yet he also has some video that is questionable. I'm not going to say whether any of it is fake or real, but as I said, some of it is quite compelling and some of it is questionable. So
well,
I'm not proud of this.
I mean, I find some of it highly questionable, especially anything that looks like an Ewok.
Well, we're both thinking about the same piece of video footage then.
I'm just going to say if he either that's real or it's not, and I'm in the boat that it's not, so that puts him as in the boat in my book. If I don't believe it's real, then where does that put it? It puts it in the hoaxing realm, and so there's questionable, and then there's hoaxing.
I would have to say his actual video stuff is questionable, but Todd does have thermal imaging video. Now, when it comes to video, you can fake video, you can fake night vision video, you can fake infrared video, but you absolutely 100% cannot fake a thermal image. It's impossible. Even if it's a guy in a suit, the thermal image will show you it's a guy in a suit. Because if you buy a good quality thermal imager, not these ones that are $1,500, go out and spend $7,000 to $10,000 on a good thermal imager. And if it's a guy in a suit, you will be able to look at the heat signature. You will see the heat signature of the suit, and you will see the heat signature of the guy in the suit. And I know this because we tested it out. We rented a gorilla suit, and we went out into the back 40, and we had Buddy walk around the woods in the suit, and we were filming it with the thermal imager. And if you know how to read a thermal imager, you could pick out the difference between the heat signature from the suit as well as the heat signature from the person in the suit. But if it's the real deal, you're going to notice it's the real deal. So when it comes to thermal imaging, he does have some thermal imaging that is legit. Todd has had some success out there doing his research. Whether he's a hoaxer or not, I don't know. I can't say for sure. But as I said, the video stuff that he has is questionable. The thermal imaging stuff that he has is not. Todd's also an excellent woodsman. He's very knowledgeable in the woods, and when it comes to wilderness survival, he's even very good at that. He spent a lot of time in the woods. He is researching Sasquatch. Whether some of his stuff is hoaxed or not, I don't know. But I showed my spot to Todd. And then, after that, well, things kind of went downhill because, if you've got a main research area and you bring me in to show me and get my permission, and get my opinion on it, I'll go. I'm looking what you want me to see, and I'm giving you my opinion. Now, if I think it's a promising area and I would like to return there, just out of respect for you, because it's your primary research area, I would ask you, hey, do you mind if I come back here with you sometime? Or do you mind if I come back on my own sometime? You know, naturally, it's Crown land. I can't stop anybody from going there. But ethically and morally, you know, if you're going to infringe on somebody's main research area and that somebody introduced you to that spot, you can at least show them some respect by asking them if they mind if you, you know, return to that spot, whether it's with them or without them. Well, that didn't happen with Todd. Todd, in a sense, made an attempt to take over the spot. He apparently had some people there from the Discovery Channel. He's working on something with them, apparently. So he had some of their people out there. And, like, I've met Dr. Jeff Meldrum. I've never done research with him, but I have met him, and we have spoken. And Dr. John Bindernagel as well. I've met him. I was on an expedition with him. I was actually had some time with myself and a couple of others, you know, spent with him in the woods. You know, I'm not saying that, oh, if you mention my name to them, they're automatically going to know who I am. But these are people that I've met, John Bindernagel, and I've met Jeff Meldrum before. And they, in a sense, if they saw me, then they would remember me and know who I am. But anyways, Todd had made arrangements. He actually brought Jeff Meldrum and John Bindernagel to my spot, which is great because I was actually communicating with Jeff Meldrum because of the Falcon project, that craft being manufactured by a company in northern Alberta. And since I'm in the Edmonton area, I was trying to get Jeff that, you know, if that thing gets off the ground, you're going to need to test it before you bring it down into the States. And there's even been some articles about them wanting to test it up here before they brought it down south. So I was trying to get him to use my primary research area, in a sense, as the testing grounds for the Falcon project. And I had also been talking with John Bindernagel for the last year in regards to my spot. Now, he brought these people there, which is great. I'm glad Jeff and John were both there, and they actually both got to have some encounters. Whether there was a sighting or not, I'm not really sure. Todd wouldn't even tell me that. I found out about this through another fellow researcher who was there with Todd, Jeff, and John that week, and he told me about it.
Yeah,
so
I'm aware of this trip. I know of this trip that they made, yeah.
Okay. Well, it apparently was a successful trip for them. Actually, I talked to John Bindernagel on the phone, and back in September, before this trip, if you had asked John Bindernagel, oh, would you attribute tree structures and tree formations as Sasquatch behavior? And John would say, definitely not. But after spending some time in my primary research area with Todd Standing, John now believes that tree structures and tree formations, X's, arches, arrows, that sort of things, are attributed to the Sasquatch. Because what he's seen in my research area in regards to these items was very, very plentiful, and he couldn't come up with any explanation for quite a few of these structures and formations. So, you know, it was a good thing that they were there. I haven't had a chance to talk with Jeff yet, but the thing is Todd didn't even mention my name to these two. He put it off to them like he discovered this area and did the research and figured out that, you know, found the trapper and this and that and the other thing, when all this came to Todd through me. Now, I think it was very disrespectful that when he made arrangements for these two scientists, these two, you know, they're PhDs.
Oh, very respectful.
You know,
I met them both.
And very
respectful. Yeah.
You know, and I would love for them to know, not just, you know, kind of remember my name when they hear it or recognize my, I would love that if they hear my name, they relate it to a person who does legitimate Sasquatch research and spends a lot of time out there trying to get what's needed to prove the creature exists. Now, you know, because what those two gentlemen think of me as a Sasquatch researcher is important to me because of the level of respect that they have from me as well as other Sasquatch researchers.
Well, let me tell you,
that kind of is important to me. I just think it would have been nice for him to say, hey, they're coming out. Why don't you come out and join us? It is your primary research area. You did show me this area. But he did none of that. So
let me ask you then.
That was the final straw.
Yeah, let me ask you then real quick. I got two questions for you, but the first one, what does that say to you about Todd Standing and his motives? I mean, it sounds like he's in it to put his name out there and make a name for himself. Now he's on a TV show, which I think has been his goal for a long time. He's been on other TV shows, I know that. But now his name. Yeah, he is a ham. And
yeah.
I do question, you know, I'm not saying he's a badass outdoorsman. I know 100 badass outdoorsmen.
Yeah.
But I do question, you know, I haven't seen his thermal. But I do question his motives, and I do as heck say that the whole Ewok-looking pictures are fake as hell. And, you know, and in saying that, what are your thoughts, what are John Bendernagel's thoughts and Meldrum's thoughts on you wanting to kill a Sasquatch if, you know, because I don't know if they agree with that, and if you feel that you want them to respect you, you know, do you think they will if they know that's your motive?
You know, to be quite honest with you, I hadn't even thought of what their opinion would be. Like I said, with everything that's gone on within the Sasquatch research world and, you know, all of the, let's say, incidences that I have had or experiences that I have had with other Sasquatch researchers, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back was, you know, back in October of this year with Todd, when he, you know, went behind my back and brought these people to my research area without even consulting me, inviting me out there, nothing. He just tried to pass it off to them like he discovered this spot. He did all the research to have all the information that he gave to them about this area all came from me. So, John and Jeff, if you are listening, you know, Todd has even deceived you. Yeah, he, you know, it's a very good area he brought you to. I'm glad you guys enjoyed the trip and had whatever experiences that you had. I'm not upset with you guys any way, shape, or form. I love the both of you dearly. But Todd deceived me as well as you guys. That is my research area that I introduced Todd to. So, John and Jeff, if you guys are listening, now you know the deal behind that. John already does because I spoke with him on the phone in regards to that trip. But I haven't had a chance to talk to Jeff yet. I did email him asking him to give me a call so we could discuss it, but he hasn't returned my call. But that may be because Todd also had them sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Highly likely, yeah.
You know,
but from what I've heard, the tidbits that it, from what I've heard is that it was pretty successful.
Oh, yes. Well, Todd just told me that it was very successful. He never told me whether they actually had a sighting, but they did have some encounters. And, you know, I just wish he would have included me in it. You know, even if I didn't have the time, you know, to go out that week and go, you know, because I do have a business that I have to operate Monday through Friday. So, you know, even if I didn't have the time, you know, just the respect of letting me know what he is up to in my primary research area, you know, the area that I showed to him, you know, that respect would have went a long way. And I actually sent Todd a text, and I basically told him, you know, stay away from there next summer. This is before I made the decision to go pro-kill, because at the time I had it all set up, you know, for the production of the show. I was going to spend 6 months in that area. doing the research. Basically, each week would be an individual episode filmed over a six-month period. I would be looking for, you know, 23, a full season, 23, 24 episodes. You know, and to do that, you need 6 months of filming time. And I was going to spend, May, go there in long weekend of May, start then, and stay till the end of November. Because in that area, there, I think we may be on to a, let's say, perhaps a regional breeding ground, because what we're finding is that the vast majority of the activity and vocalizations that are heard is between the month of October and November. Now, I do believe that these creatures breed seasonally, like most other animals in the woods, breed in the fall and give birth in the spring. That gives the time for the little one to grow through the summer and get prepared for its first winter. So I think that we're possibly, if not a domicile, then definitely a breeding ground with a small population that sticks around year-round. Todd, I went into it willing to give him the opportunity to show me that everybody else is wrong. Now, whether he's a hoaxer or not, I don't know. I can't say for sure. But in regards to his ethics and morals, he just doesn't have any.
Well, yeah, it says a lot about the person in general, you know. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Like I said, he maybe he does have some good thermal. I don't know. I mean, has he released it? Not to my knowledge. And but everything else about the guy is, screams hoax to me. And in it for the the ham fact, you know, ham factor. The guy's in it for the money, if not the money, the fame. You know, which is really silly, because really, in the scheme of things, you're not going to get anywhere with that. But you're 15 minutes of fame. But, I mean, it's really rude and disingenuous to jump on someone else's area like that. If you've been invited, you know, and then to kind of take it over or claim it as your own, you know, I've had many opportunities where I've been invited to areas that I've gone out and gone with the people that invited me, and I've asked for permission to come out on my own, and sometimes they've granted that to me and sometimes they haven't. But I've never gone back to an area that I have not been allowed back into. I mean, that's just... Or let alone say that I was the finder of this area, or this is my area. That's just no respect, and tells a lot about the person's character. I mean, I find that really disgusting, personally.
Well, I actually, back in September, I had even gotten wind that the BFRO, they were supposed to be doing their expedition in Alberta near the community of Nordegg. And I had actually gotten wind that they found out about my spot and where it was, and that they were actually going to do their expedition there. And I know that the organizers of their expedition generally show up at the spot usually Tuesday or Wednesday. And I actually canceled my whole week from work. And I went out there Monday morning, and I set up my camp, and I thought, if they're going to come here to do research, they're going to find me already here, and I'm going to politely ask them to go elsewhere because I'm already here. Because Matt Moneymaker and I, we don't get along. I said something to Matt a long time ago, which I am sorry for, and I have apologized to him for it. It was something that I said out of the heat of passion, I guess. And what I said was completely wrong. It wasn't something I said about him. It was something that I said I wanted to do to him. But it was wrong of me to do that. And
I have apologized to him
many, many times. I've tried to get in touch with him. Maybe he doesn't forgive me. I don't know. I hope that he does. And Matt, if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about. And I am very, very truly sorry for what I said. But we'll get away from that. But anyways, so I found out they were coming out, and I just went out there just so that they would not go into my spot. How they even found out about it, I have no idea. I'm assuming through Ken Walker, because I was told that he was actually going to be the one showing them where the spot was, and which is why Ken and I don't talk anymore, because when I found that out, I asked because Ken had showed me the spot. I said to him, I said, and Ken has badmouthed the BFRO many times in the past to me. And now I find out he's bringing the BFRO to that spot when all this time he was telling me he wanted to keep them out of there. So I thought, okay, if he's bringing the BFRO there, I said to him, I said, Ken, I said, I've been communicating with Todd Scandy. Would you mind if I brought Todd there? Now, Ken said no. Now, with him scolding me and telling me, you know, I better not show the BFRO that spot, blah, 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 and then he's going ahead and do it, I'm like, okay, well, all bets are off, you know. I'm sorry, but he knows how I feel about the BFRO, and he knows I know how he feels, but yet he's still invited. So I just said, you know what, even if he said no, maybe it was disrespectful, maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But because he was bringing the BFRO there after him bad-mouthing them and whatnot, I thought, okay, I'm going to invite Todd out. And because I brought Todd out there, that's why Ken and I don't talk anymore. And the thing with Todd standing, that was the straw that broke the camel's back that made me say, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to get the 50 cal thermal imaging scope and... if I get the shot, I'm going to take it. Now, people will say, oh, you will never get the shot. You'll never get the opportunity to take a shot. Now, there are some legitimate thermal imaging videos out there of Sasquatch.
I agree.
And there's even some legitimate video out there. Now, if you can get a Sasquatch on thermal image or on video, then you can get them in the crosshairs and you can get that shot. It's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time, pointing your weapon or your imager or your camera in the right direction. Like I said, I might never get the shot.
Well, see, now you're talking about, what, taking that shot at nighttime?
Well, I would be trying both in the day and the night because thermal imagers work in the daytime as well.
Yes.
You know, if he's behind that shrub of bushes, you know, so you're going to see that heat source behind the bushes. You know,
right.
So long
yeah.
as it's not too thick.
But your chances are probably better during the night, and in which case you put yourself, just for argument's sake, say you do get that shot off. I mean, you're going to be creeping up on something at nighttime, hoping that you killed it and that you come upon it dead and that there's nothing else in the area, which the chances are highly unlikely that there's not.
Oh, it'll be a very dangerous situation. I know that... that I'm risking my life by trying it, you know. Like I said, I might never get the shot, but if I ever do, who knows? Maybe I won't get anything out. Maybe I'll down one and another one will come out from behind the trees and come at me. Like the trapper that abandoned this area, like I said before, he had 7 daylight sightings. Now, one of his sightings, the situation surrounding that sighting was he was working his trap line and he found himself surrounded and they were screaming at him. Now, whether they knew it was him or he's thinking that maybe they thought he was a deer because this particular group in this area, they know who he is. This is the trapper that's been trapping this area for years. They know who he is. He knows they're there. They've shown themselves to him. They've been aggressive towards him. That's why he gave up the trap line, because of the issues that he had with the squatches in this area. Now, when he was surrounded and they were screaming at him, he thought, I'm going to fire a shot in the air just so that they know it's me, in case they're thinking it's a deer or some other type of animal that they might be hunting. So he fired a shot in the air. After he fired a shot in the air, big male came up from behind the tree and charged at him. In mid-charge from his left, the female stepped out from behind the trees, showed herself to the male. As soon as the male saw the female, they both looked at each other, looked at him, and then they backed away into the woods and disappeared. Now, the trapper, what he is thinking is that when he fired the shot in the air, the male was thinking, oh, you just shot my female. I'm coming to get you. But in mid-charge, the female showed the male, no, I'm okay. He didn't shoot me. And then they both backed off, which tells me that These creatures think logically. Okay, I was coming to get you because I thought you shot my woman. But you didn't shoot my woman, so I'm going to back off and leave you alone. So that tells, like I said, that tells me that these creatures, this species, thinks logically, similar
they
to
think,
humans.
They think logically, but you mentioned earlier that you get your crazies, I mean, in your opinion, you get your crazy Sasquatches, and I mean, just like humans, you know, you get different personalities.
Yeah.
So maybe you'll take a shot at one that's freaking mental.
who knows? There was Ken actually was back there one day. He was going to get the pictures from his game cams that he had set up, and he ran into two hunters that were coming out of that area. And as soon as he could see them, he could tell that something was wrong. So he started talking to them, you know, hi, how are you? You know, how's your hunting going? Blah, 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 blah. And he sensed that something was wrong. And he asked them, he said, you guys look like you've seen a ghost. He said, you guys okay? And the one guy looked at Ken and said, if you're planning on going back there, I suggest you don't, because anybody who goes back there is just looking to get killed. And Ken's like, well, what happened? Oh, we don't want to talk about it. We're just leaving, and we're never coming back, and I don't suggest you go back there either. And these two hunters were just adamant that if you go back there, you could very well get killed. What Ken believes that maybe they went back there hunting. Maybe one of them took a shot at what they thought it was a bear and maybe missed or wounded it, or who knows. But they definitely had some type of encounter back there that scared them enough. These are grown men with guns in the bush. Something scared them enough to send them away with thoughts that they never want to return. So I'm thinking quite possibly they took a shot at something, thought it was a bear. Maybe it was a Squatch, you know, took a shot at him, the Squatch stood up, and maybe charged at him, or who knows what happened. But something definitely happened to these two hunters. Going after one to kill one is a very dangerous situation, and, you know, if I get that shot, who knows, maybe I won't make it otherwise. I don't know.
There's a lot of people in the chat room. They're just curious, you know, on Alberta. Do you mind saying whereabouts in Alberta without giving up the location, like outside a certain town or?
I'll just say south of Robb, Alberta, and that's spelled R-O-B-B.
Okay, that's probably perfect. You know, that a lot of people are curious.
We
have a few
Canadians in the
chat room. They're just curious. They don't need to know location. They're just curious on the area.
Yeah, just south of Robb.
Cool, right on.
It's interesting that there's so many up there, and it's such a cold environment. You know, I'm in Minnesota, and it's cold here, too, and they claim they're in northern Minnesota as well. And I agree with the breeding seasonal, though, too. Otherwise, I just don't think that they could survive. And this has got to be it's even colder probably where you are.
Well, sometimes, here in the city at some point, you know, many times over the winter, it's anywhere between, you know, 25 to 40 below on many of the days. And, you know, up in the mountains, like where I park my truck is at 4,700 feet. So, you know, up there, I'm sure the snow would be deeper and, you know, you're higher up in the air, so I'm sure it would be much colder with the wind chill factor. So, you know, yeah, I'm sure the breeding is done, I would believe, in the fall due to the fact, for survival reasons. Whether they're capable of, let's say, having sex, in the way that we do in regards to we're doing it for pleasure, not necessarily for reproduction. I can't really speculate on that, but I do believe that they do save the breeding for the fall time. That way the young have the summer to grow and gain some strength to make it through the first winter. But I do think that the winters are very harsh on them, especially the young and the old.
What about... So are they, do you believe that they're year-round, and do you go in these areas year-round?
Hello. Hello? We all got cut off there.
Yeah, hung up on everybody. The chat room's going crazy.
Okay, we are back.
Ouch.
It's just, it sounds like he's in a very interesting area.
Sounds like the MIBs got to him. Doggone it.
Yeah, I think they oh, some funny comments in the chat room.
Yeah.
But,
it was the Canadians.
It's just, I mean, I guess where he is, Canada has a lot of coniferous forests, and I think that's a necessity in climates like this and in winter in general, just so they can hide.
Yeah, is Aaron still with us?
No.
Oh, we lost him too. Oh, well, I'll blame the Canadians and all this.
He's definitely got a lot of interesting information. I mean, the guy has been doing this a long time.
Yeah, I don't question some of his sightings or his area, but you know, his involvement with Todd Standings got me. You know, maybe he went into that blind-eyed. I don't know, but Todd Standing to me is like I said, I haven't seen his thermal, and I'm not going to talk about his woodsmanship and all that. Sure, the guy's probably great in the woods, but you put anything out there, it looks like a
so
freaking
is half
Ewok.
Of Minnesota.
But the guy, you know, Todd Stang to me is a hoaxer. He may be in it for the right reasons, but he brought certain attention to him for reasons. And, you know, maybe he's get what he's wanting, you know. But
yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
It was nice of Aaron to somewhat defend him in the beginning there, even
yeah,
after.
I think the truth kind of came out there, though. I mean, his true feelings. And he did not question, you know, he said that some of his footage may be hoax or not. He's not sure. So, you know, I just don't tend to mingle with that type of person. You know, Todd Standing, like I said, just another one of these guys that's questionable, and especially when it comes to anything he's posted out there. You know, it's landed him a show or two, big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem is a lot of these people just hoax, and they get known, and then they get on TV shows and.
Well, yeah, it starts a chain reaction, and especially if you've been in the field for a long time and you maybe know they're there or you know for a fact they're there or you don't, you get frustrated, and then you start wanting attention or whatnot, and that's what happens, you know. But your more credible researchers will never do that. It's not something they're going to do. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of these people out there, and I'm not saying Aaron is at all. I'm glad he called in. He gave his... Yeah, try giving Laura a call.
Yeah, we got 5 minutes left.
Hey, I was just about to call you guys back.
Oh, good.
Oh,
I
nice.
Don't know what happened there, but
I have no idea.
We
all
got
sudden,
cut off.
Yeah, I lost the call.
Well, we were blaming the Canadians on that.
Yeah.
Blame us. Blame Canada.
Yeah, blame Canada.
Well, we got about 4 minutes left, so... anything else
you're
you
in
really
the
like to...
Well,
yeah,
you're
maybe.
In the midst of asking me a question.
Yeah, and I kind of forgot what my question was, to be honest. But I guess, now, obviously, you don't have a time frame. Like you said, this may take many years. But do you think you have a legit chance of actually shooting a Sasquatch? I mean, many people say they're going to do this, and, you know, and many people say they have. Nothing ever comes from it. You honestly believe you have a honest-to-God chance of shooting one?
Yes, I do. With the amount of activity in my primary research area, I've had sightings visually with my own eye. I've had sightings through the night vision, which I've actually been able to record. I had one sighting with my thermal imager, but unfortunately, at that time, my recording device for the thermal imager was not working properly, and it had shut off without me realizing it, so I wasn't able to get that on video. But if I can see one, whether it be with my own eyes or with the night vision, the video camera, or the thermal imager, then it is possible to get crosshairs on, because whether you're looking through a camera or whether you're looking through a scope, the possibility is there. And with the amount of activity in my primary research area, it is quite possible to get a shot. As I said, I may never get the shot. It may take years. And in the process of doing it, I might get myself killed. Who knows? But if I ever don't come back from a trip, one of the things that you're going to want to find is my video equipment, specifically being my glasses, because I wear those all the time when I'm out there. And so if there's if I'm shot at a Squatch and it came after me, there's going to be some video of it. So what do you need to do?
That's not necessarily true, because I know an area that I work in, and I'm not saying it's Squatch related, but there's a missing guy out there with fishing tackle and a backpack, and he's never been found. No sighting, nothing. And they had a National Guard out looking for this guy, so you may just disappear.
Very well. But, don't look for my body. Look for my camera equipment. Look for my camera equipment, not my body.
Do you ever run into people in your area, or is it just that remote, or?
The odd time you'll see or hear a quad on one of the cut lines nearby. The people out there are far and few between. And when you do run into quadders out there, it's usually on a weekend. There's a large area just south of where we're at that is popular for camping. And some of the quadders do come that far north to where we're at, but they're far and few between.
Are you going to continue to do this by yourself?
Yes. I think that's where you're going to get the most success. The less people you have out there, the more chances of having some activity. And that's based on experience, because I went out with groups of people before, and we just never had the luck that I've had when I've been by myself.
Okay. And are you afraid or care about the backlash will come if you were successful?
No. If anybody wants to talk bad about me for shooting and killing one, go ahead. I don't care. The only way to prove it is to have a specimen, and the only way to get a specimen is to either drop one with a bullet or find one that died of natural causes, which is probably going to be pretty much impossible to do. So I think the only chance is to drop one with a bullet and bring it in. Yeah, you can try and tranquilize it, but you would need a whole team, because once you tranquilize it, you're going to need somebody to collect samples on site. And then what is your plan? Do you put it in a polar bear cage and bring it in, show it, and then bring it back and release it, put it in a zoo, or what? Who knows? I think tranquilizing one and bringing it in tranquilized will have greater effects. That would affect the animal worse than being dead. I would rather be dead than be caged up my entire life. If a tranquilizing job was to be done, it would have to be done with the intent of re-releasing the animal right after you have the press conference.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I guess I think we're all off now, huh, Shane?
I think so. So thank you, Aaron, for joining us and for being honest and giving us your opinion and your thoughts
lots of information on us.
Yeah, exactly. So,
thank you,
Aaron, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Great, awesome, man. Thank you.
We'll have to watch the local blogs to see what's being said about tonight's show. I'm sure there will be a few people out there that have some comments, and it'll be interesting to read.
Yes, there will
yes,
be
indeed.
A comment guaranteed.
Indeed.
All right. Well,
awesome,
have yourself a good night, Aaron.
Thanks.
Yeah, you guys as well. Thank you. And if you ever want to have me on the show as a guest again, feel free to give me a call.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We will.
Or you can send me an email.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Cool.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you very much, guys. Okay. Bye. Bye-bye now.